Chapter 36. Tilly. The appeal of a romance with Hollywood's newest, toothsome prince of action proved less enduring for me than the romance itself. Although it must be said that neither the romantic appeal nor the romance lasted very long by any standard. Within a number of months, both had perished, leaving only the tabloids and the gossip mill to harness the sycophantic imagination of the Zach West fan base and prolong the public's fascination with something that no longer actually existed. Once the relationship was over and we were no longer seen together in public, Zach and I were conscripted by telephoto Zooms, large-eared waiters and imaginary friends into unbearably cruel and cheesy productions of our own romantic afterlife. These were all terribly overwrought, poorly executed dramas in which the truth played but small, unremarkable cameos. Sometimes, the story was that I had been scorned, a victim of Zach's extra testosterone and lust for danger. Far more often, I had punctured Zach's heart with a cruel stiletto heel on my way to someone else's bed. And it was not always the bed of another man. I once read that I was irreconcilably lesbian, but lacking talent, and quite taken with Zach's rapidly amassing fortune. The more optimistic narratives tended to cling to the notion, based on old photos reported as current or current photos altered to support a caption, that we had manufactured a faux hiatus. The polite version was simply that news of our love's demise had been greatly exaggerated, and that we were simply stealing privacy from a life that had none to offer. We had, they reported, banished public displays of affection and had taken vows of discretion. Friends, conveniently not wishing to be named, assured that I had sworn off the notorious Zach West beach parties, not because of any diminished affection for Zach, but because I wanted my time with him to be less of a circus and more intimate. Tilly time, these friends had said, was quality time. The more cynical version was that the relationship had always been about public attention, and that the apparent breakup had been manufactured every bit as much as the initial coupling. And for the same reason, to tweak the public curiosity and to keep our names in fresh circulation. This version tended to predict a dramatic rekindling of our affections, just when Zach's public was finally satisfied that the relationship was dead. It was the tabloid twist on the old Hollywood cliche in which the supposed corpse suddenly twitches and stirs in the background of the shot. The truth, the original work on which all these various productions had been based, was far more ordinary and, at the same time, more shameful. The truth is that however much I wanted to love Zach, and however much I convinced myself that I had found adult love with a man of my own generation, I never really did love him. Not because I was a secretly scheming lesbian, but because I was incapable of loving anyone who needed and approved of me. I was incapable of loving in return. Not incapable. That would be too kind. Unwilling is a better word. I was so blindly stubborn about such things. Like everyone else who opened up to me in my youth, I never gave Zach a fighting chance. How absurdly easy those words are to say. Now, so many years after unburdening the present, untangling it from the past, like two fishing lines perpetually raveled beneath the level of my own understanding. Hindsight, with all its clarity, can bring a cruel perspective to one's life. If I could go back and do it differently, if I could end things differently with Zach, I would. Not that Zach West needed or approved of me in the least. He was riding so high on the wave of his own popular approval that earning my affections was well down on his list of priorities. Had my relationship been with Zach, I might have been drawn closer in by the luxury of his indifference. But my relationship was not with Zach West. It was with Zell Whippo. And unlike his alter ego, Zell approved. Zell needed. Zell loved. I may have been Zell's only friend in Zach's world. I did not see him much. It took the right environment and a right blend of intoxicants for him to show himself. But even with hard-partying Zach in full command, I always felt Zell looking at me, pleading with me from behind Zach's eyes. He was the breath between Zach's words. It was Zell's fingers that interlaced with my own, Zell's lips on mine. And because I was still that oblivious, unenlightened prisoner of my own past, that was the kiss of death for both of them. Even if it was my unconscious self that wanted out, my conscious mind demanded a reason, a good reason, for euthanizing a romance envied by straight women and gay men the world over. It was not difficult. The raucous life of Zach West provided an abundance of plausible reasons. The increasing undercurrent of drugs and the looming prospect of addiction might have been a good one. His sophomoric antics, his slavish devotion to the fawning Zach Pack, his near obsessive concern with his own media image, his immunity to books, his irritatingly insouciant outlook on all matters of national and international concern. But in the end, my own immaturity and dysfunction found an excuse in the prosaic purlieus of the heart. Sex and lying about sex. Maria Beckwith was not some starstruck roadie. She was part of the inner circle, the girlfriend of a Zach Pack regular named Tiki Emanuel. Tiki was a well-sculpted production assistant with corner office aspirations. Plan B was a thriving designer drug racket that kept him flush despite his extravagant tastes. He had sharp, appraising green eyes, a fetish for European sports cars, and a proclivity for wearing formal attire to casual functions. Tiki also liked to be the last to speak in any exchange, wrongly suggesting that while others had been busy contributing, he had been busy judging, separating the wheat from the chaff. If James Bond had been written as younger, shorter, and Malaysian, the MGM casting agents would have beaten a path to the doorway of Tiki Emanuel. Maria, 6 years Tiki senior, was a Nebraskan beauty queen with a passion for celebrity event planning. She was a dead ringer for a lean, over-caffeinated, ambition-twisted Doris Day. For all her apparent fresh-off-the-bus wholesomeness, a persona she had honed to perfection and knew how to play to great effect. Maria brought a conniving, clandestine, quasi-paramilitary approach to the weddings, wakes, and bar mitzvahs of the Hollywood elite. In her more candid, usually gin-soaked moments, she liked to boast about her latest machinations to insinuate herself into the personal lives of prospective clients. Famously, Maria once feigned affection for the only grandson of a movie mogul, who, as a 64-year-old widower, was openly wooing a starlet barely one-third his age. When the mogul inevitably popped the question, Maria was well-positioned to begin planning what would be a $15 million wedding out on the scenic sea-battered cliffs of Carmel. Maria all but hand-whipped the ocean spume and spindrift into a delectable frosting for a ginger lemon cake that served over 400 guests. 5 days following the nuptials, the groom suffered a massive coronary in a Cabo San Lucas honeymoon suite. By that time, Maria had unceremoniously dumped the grandson, but she was by then so close to the new bride, cum widow, that she was the obvious choice to conceive, plan, and coordinate the cooling mogul celebration of life. A $3 million fate. That was a real twofer, Maria liked to say to the rest of the Zack Pack retinue, usually lifting some toxic-colored libation in a toast to her own dubious accomplishment. Tiki and Maria, each in their own way, saw Zack West as the missing element to a larger plan. For Tiki, Zack was his ticket to the corner office. He always seemed to have something that he needed to discuss with Zack privately, making quiet apologies to others as he whisked him away into the empty corners of crowded rooms. Once there, Tiki set about hard-selling Zack on the next blockbuster production that no one but Tiki Emanuel seemed to know was coming. Maria, meanwhile, was perpetually and not so secretly editing a mental guest list for Zack's wedding to whomever he may ultimately choose to propose. She tended to stand out from the others in the constancy of her efforts to stay in my favor, not because she genuinely sought my inclusion in the group, or even because she thought the name of Tilly West was written somewhere in the stars, but because, for Maria, I represented the shortest path between wanting and having. If there was any inclination by the rest of the Zack Pack to think of me as a passing fancy or a purely sexual enthrallment that was likely to burn itself out in time, Maria was quick to course correct everyone back to a more romantic horizon. "You two were meant for each other," she would marvel when we were alone, usually in some marbled restroom reapplying our faces. "I've never seen him act like this with other women. You really ground him, Till. Zachary needs that." I have no doubt that Maria was planting similarly encouraging seeds with Zachary, which I am still petty enough to note was not even his fake name. It was thus with considerable irritation and disbelief that I received the rumor that they, Zack West and Maria Beckwith, were carrying on behind my back. An entertainment reporter posing as a groundskeeper approached me one morning outside my Pilates class and asked me for a reaction. My reaction was to laugh and dismiss the notion instantly. He said there were pictures. I left him with his recorder and his hedge clippers and no printable comment. Not only was I permanently disinclined to believe anything suggested as fact by incognito entertainment news reporters, I also thought I had Maria's number. I never exactly trusted her motives, but I never expected that she had any designs on Zach. That afternoon, Zach and I attended a birthday party for a friend of a Zach Pack regular who lived up in Laurel Canyon. Zach had promised that we would just make an obligatory appearance and then head off to a Culver City blues club he liked near Limert Park called Babe and Ricky's. That plan suited me just fine, since I was not particularly in the mood for Zach's friends, and I was all for avoiding the shallow patter that passed for conversation at such affairs. But within 45 minutes, I knew that the quick obligatory appearance plan was dead on arrival. Zach was always the cynosure. He was greeted like Odysseus returning to Ithaca. Leaving early was unthinkable. Not impossible, unthinkable. Tiki Emanuel was there and, per the norm, found a way to sequester Zach down by the swimming pool for large chunks of the evening. It was late when we finally left. Zach headed south, still thinking the night might yet hold the second act we had discussed. But by the time we reached Mulholland, we both agreed that we had missed our window of opportunity. Zach asked if I wanted to go to the beach house. I declined, asking him to take me home. He nodded, strangely moody. "You okay?" I asked.
"Yeah. Why?"
"You seem a little weird." Zach shrugged. "Tiki sure had your ear tonight."
"That's Tiki," he said. "The guy loves my ear."
"You didn't..."
"What?"
"Take anything, did you?"
"Nothing much. I'm good, really."
He turned east on Mulholland Drive, cutting across the slope of the canyonlands above the city. It would have been faster to simply turn around and climb Laurel Canyon Road back up to the Ventura Freeway, which would have given us a straight shot into Glendale. But I said nothing, knowing from experience that second-guessing a decision already made was pointless. As was arguing with Zach when he was numbing out on something. He did not seem at all impaired, so I did not insist on driving. I could, however, sense his mood darkening. And a lengthening silence brought on a familiar fog. Over the embankment, the lights shimmered up from the depths like phosphorescent algae, and the back of the Hollywood Bowl floated in the dark like a pale jellyfish. Trying to keep the connection bright and alive, I told Zach about the reporter and the rumor about him and Maria, laughing as I did. "Would you ever in a million years do Maria Beckwith?" I asked. Zach laughed, shaking his head. But that was all. He stayed focused on the road as I prattled on about the encounter. "Would Maria Beckwith ever in a million fucking years pass up an opportunity to make a fee off your wedding?" Zach laughed like it was the funniest thing he had ever heard. I thought he might drive us into the ravine, and it was funny. But I soon regretted making that crack, not out of any respect for Maria, but because it took the conversation down a path of dark hilarity, away from the light, away from controlled revelation. In a different conversation, he might have come clean. He might have at least stopped digging. 2 days later, I learned that Maria and Tiki were not speaking. 2 days after that, the photos of Maria and Zach hit the tabloids. My friends told me that they were obvious fakes, but I knew better. Never have a tryst in a hotel room with a city view. Too many buildings. Too many windows. Too many eyes. Whatever passing resemblance Maria Beckwith may have had to Doris Day, it utterly vanished in her snapshot parade of coital grimaces. As for Zach, even as Maria devoured him for the camera, he was as I remember him today, lost and running. Zach admitted the affair, but not without a lot of protestation and misdirection that insulted us both. Zach's incredulity at being accused, a poorly rehearsed reaction that he wrapped around a lecture about the tactics of the tabloid press, eventually broke open, spilling pathetic high school caliber excuses. Maria had invited him to lunch. She and Tiki were having troubles. Zach had had too much to drink. It all happened so fast. Ultimately, with the kind of determined zeal my father always hated in me, I wore him down, clawing back the layers of persona until I found Zell, cowering and horrified at what he had done. It had not been his only time with Maria. And Maria had not been the only one in the short period that Zach and I had been dating. I had never previously had occasion to confront a cheating lover. And yet, my reaction had been scripted and played for me 100 times. I recalled Angus Mann standing in the moon shadow of the elephant fountain outside our hotel in Kenya, lamenting that the ubiquity of television and the motion picture had robbed us of virgin experience. We have all confronted the cheating lover. I knew exactly what to say to Zach, and exactly how to say it. The irony is that between the two of us, he was easily the more honest. To the very end, I let him believe that he had betrayed something sacred that had never really existed in the first place. I left him believing that deceit and betrayal was tantamount to rejection. And he believed, because I let him believe, that I thought more of myself than to trade love for rejection. He could not have known, for I never told him, and I did not even know myself, that in rejecting me, he had given me everything I wanted, everything I needed. And that everything else, the acceptance, the love, the kinship of lost souls, was what had driven me away. "Can you forgive me?" he asked, beaten, exhausted. humiliated. Yes,
I said, after a long and measured silence.
I can forgive you, but I can't be with you, Zach. Not like this, not anymore. I'd rather be your friend.
And like a thief in the night, I was gone. Again, the breakup did nothing to stop speculation that the union for which there had been such a froth of attention was not really done and over. Zach and I did our best to remain true to the friends to the end mantra. But if I could not stomach the romance, Zach could not stomach the friendship, and Zell could not stomach the guilt. What remained was an uncomfortably cordial business relationship, marked by hollow laughter and unnecessary touching. The Zoom lenses then made of that husk what they did, and the public drew its own self-interested and hopeful conclusions. In all the awkwardness, with my ribs mostly healed and Zell's heart mostly broken, the Price Point production soldiered on out of sequence, working to capture the early scenes. Jack and Sienna Price living an idyllic married life against the studio magic of our out-the-kitchen-window backdrop of New England autumn foliage, before all the excitement that would test their mettle and threaten Western democracy and clutter the Potomac with maniacal Muslims and bits of charred aircraft. Jack is devoted and tender. Sienna is wise beyond her years. The tendrils of Zach's infidelity reached at least as far as Ohio, where, in the overly solicitous concerns of her family and oldest associations, my mother was no doubt forced to defend my honor against my own poor judgment. She called, trying her best not to lecture. She avoided any mention of my father, leaving me to imagine his reaction. Closer to home, news that the golden boy had proven unworthy of my affections shook Blair Gaines loose from wherever he had been holding his silent vigil. He appeared suddenly one afternoon on the threshold of the Price Point set, talking with Darnell Lewis like they were old friends. Privately, there was little or no professional respect between them, and everyone knew it. They had each taken swipes at the other's work. Directors, as a rule, are an insecure and catty bunch. But they generally respected each other's territory, particularly the kingdom of the movie set and all its loyal subjects. As I approached, I recognized the overly polite nods and smiles and eyebrows raised in keen interest that counted as Blair's best conversational genuflection. Darnell's fleshier features were pulled back against his skull in the souring expression that tended to come over him in the presence of bad acting. In the context of a typical Darnell Lewis production, this usually meant that the character was insufficiently terrified or enraged or distraught. In the present context, I supposed it meant that Blair Gaines, even with his hands clasped politely behind his back, was insufficiently obsequious. Blair broke off when he saw me, wishing Darnell luck, and walked me off the set. "Slumming?" I asked.
"Good news, Tilly John," he said.
"What's that?" I asked, cool, unconcerned.
"We're back in business," he said. Who's back in business?
We are. Lime Tree.
Oh?
You're in.
In what?
Oh, come on, Tilly John.
He stopped, grabbing my hands, glancing in furtive irritation at a silver-haired man on a Segway whirring up behind us. He let the man pass, then refocused his attention on me.
The Lime Tree. Elena Ivanova. You're in, Tilly. For good this time.
I slipped my fingers from his grasp and resumed walking.
You mean I've been selected for the part that was originally mine?
That's nice. He followed, talking at me. The script was great, he said.
True, he said. True to the original source. Brilliant. Bloody brilliant.
Angus had missed his calling. I kept walking, trying to unlock my car door a football field away.
Tilly!
What do you want, Blair?
I want you to be excited about this. I want you to show up for a reading.
A reading?
Yes. A reading. In 2 weeks. 3 if you need it. Christ! Stop busting my balls, Tilly John. Do you want the role or don't you?
The timing was not lost on me. My relationship with Zach West Megastar had publicly imploded. And suddenly, here was Blair, all smiles and promises.
You're in, Tilly John. You're in.
He saw an opportunity. There was no competing against Zach. But Blair had figured that Zach was gone, at least for now. And so here he was, whispering in my ear. No different than Maria Beckwith or Tiki Emanuel had been with Zach. He was working on a bigger plan. Except that Blair's bigger plan wasn't a corner office or a big fee. It was love. I was Blair's bigger plan.
I've got a lot going on, Blair, I said.
Like what? Price point?
I looked at him, shrugging.
For fuck's sake, don't tell me you're passing because of that piece of shit. Danielle's almost done. A month left? 3? He just fucking told me 3 minutes ago. I suppose Darnell could still break a couple more of your ribs.
I shot him a look.
Kidding. Christ. I know you don't really have anything else going on.
I snorted.
How could you possibly know what I have going on?
I pay attention. Am I wrong? You have something cooking I don't know about?
I kept walking, not answering his question. We both knew he was right.
I mean, besides taking it up the clacker for Zach West.
Fuck you, Blair.
Yeah? Fuck me? I'd never treat you like that, little prick.
Don't believe everything you read. Zach and I are fine.
You're a bad liar. And he's a two-timing shit.
How's your wife, Blair? I shot.
Ex-wife, he said. Signed the papers a month ago.
He said the words so quickly and with such assurance that I knew he had been waiting
for an opportunity to speak them. I imagined him practicing on his way to the lot to see me, anticipating this very moment, picturing my face when he not only returned Colonel Ivanova to my custody, but then also revealed, no doubt as evidence of his availability and noble intentions, that he had divorced his wife of 30-plus years. We reached my car and I opened the door.
Sorry to hear that. Was it ugly?
No, it was easy. I gave her everything she wanted.
Have dinner with me too.
Gee, I can see you're really broken up about it.
Tilly.
No.
Why? Let's give it a go.
I'm late.
For what? Cancel it. Let's go for a drive.
I'm meeting Zach. I lied. Blair nodded in resignation. If he knew I was lying, he did not let on. He stepped back and let me get in and close the door. He leaned in the window. His expression was as earnest as I had ever seen it. Creases fanned out from the corners of his eyes, and his brow was deeply furrowed. He was as tanned as ever, but somehow his complexion had sallowed. His hair needed cutting. He looked older than he should have. Suddenly, I caught a sense of suffering, like the scent of decay on a breeze. I didn't know how much of it was me and how much was the lion tree, but it was suddenly clear that the past few months had brought him a kind of struggle and torture.
I gave the new script to Milton Chenoweth. I hand-delivered it to that sanctimonious, patronizing son of a bitch.
Why? I asked. I mean,
because you told me not to come to your house, not to call. So I didn't.
Could have emailed it, Blair.
Email? Have you lost your mind? That's strictly against policy. One wrong click, one heck, one wrong address, and suddenly everyone has your screenplay. I've sacked people for less. And Angus would choke me to death. Besides, I was trying to respect your boundaries. Official channels, strictly business, no shortcuts, that sort of thing.
I smiled as kindly as I could at the fact that in trying to respect my boundaries, Blair had hunted me down at the studio and asked me out to dinner. He read my mind and stared down at his shoes, pushing against the door with both hands.
Right. Well, I hate boundaries as much as I hate your agent and your boyfriend.
I laughed. Self-deprecation was not Blair's style. The Blair Gaines I knew in Africa, the Blair Gaines everyone else in the world knew, would have been screaming at me. That he was not screaming underscored his vulnerability. Other women would have found the change in temperament endearing. I found it strange and a little sad.
Look, he said, just go pick it up. Or get Milton to email it to you. Just don't let him sit on it. He can hate me all he wants, but this is a good script, Tilly John. Read it. We've got a list of decent second choices in case you really want to pass. But none of them can do Ivanova like you can do Ivanova. Don't let her go to someone else.
He didn't say please. He didn't have to. His eyes said it for him. Where is Angus on this?
He knows I'm right.
I let that sink in. So, then you're pushing this? You've had to convince him.
Look.
Yes or no, Blair? He stood up and took a breath, not wanting to continue. I found my keys and jammed them into the ignition. Blair's face reappeared in the window frame.
Okay. Okay, look. Angus was fully on board in the beginning. We both wanted you for the part. I mean, there was just no question about it. Then, Angus...
He paused. Jesus! Spit it out, Blair. I'm a big girl.
He changed his mind. All this shit about Zek. I mean, doing Price Point was bad enough. Angus is a literary guy. Till? You know that. Price Point is about as far on the other side of the fucking compass as you can get. He barely tolerates actors. But movie stars he cannot abide. We're dealing with a cast of unknowns now. Good actors, a lot of them. But no one has ever heard of any of them. Angus doesn't want the film turning into a vanity piece dangling from your charm bracelet. Somehow I got him over that hump, but when the tabloids went apeshit over your sex life, well...
He thinks I'm a train wreck, I said.
Look, we live and work in LA. We pop these off-screen scandals back like they're little breath mints. Hell, Darnell Lewis and Cecil Abrams are sniggering all the way to the bank. The Zack and Tilly show will be good for another point or two at the box office. You couldn't have timed it any better if you tried. But you know Angus. He's not of this place or this business. So... Yeah, he disapproves. Ivanova has a certain... What? A moral rectitude about her, I guess. A certain dignity. It's like... She's real to him.
So, he doesn't want my big bucket of class slopping over onto his character. I sounded genuinely offended, but I knew that what he was saying made sense. Angus's fidelity had always been to Ivanova, never to me. Blair winced. Then he nodded.
He wanted to go with number two on the list.
And yet here you are.
Yeah, he said. Here I bloody am.
And just what Faustian bargain has made that possible, Blair? Because I know you didn't magically change his mind about me.
No. His mind is made up on that score. So I gave up my veto rights on every other character in the movie. He got everyone he wanted. And I let him cut out the only two scenes I had any hand in writing. It's basically his movie now.
All so that I could keep the role of Ivanova. Blair didn't answer. He closed his eyes. And he's willing to take me. Blair nodded, adding,
It was never about the acting, Tilly John. You've always been the right actor. For both of us.
It's just the rest of me he can't stomach.
Don't be mad. It's just Angus. Just read the script. Keep an open mind. Think about it. But think about it as business, Tilly John. Leave all the rest of it on the side of the fucking road. Okay? Think of Angus Mann as just another asshole producer or director. Once you start bringing Ivanova to life, he'll forgive everything else. Trust me.